I came up with a saying, make a difference today for someone who is fighting for their tomorrow. When I look across this arena and when I talk to people, and I look to people, you don't need to be a Russell Wilson, an Aaron Rodgers to make a difference out there. Every single person in this room can be a difference maker. You can be just a normal person who gets up every morning and goes to work. But you can be a difference maker. Put a smile on those faces. My kids, my friends, when they came in to see me, not once did they ever have a frown on their face. So I just urge anybody out there, if you have somebody out there suffering, it doesn't have to be cancer. It could be somebody not having a good day. It could be your mom, your dad. It could be your grandparents. What you say to them and the smile that you have on your face, that can be the difference in them making it the next day. Remember that. Always, always persevere. Like Jimmy B said, never, ever give up. And to my Bills fans back home, I love you. And to everybody here tonight and to the Jimmy B Foundation, thank you for honoring me and humbling me with this award. I love you all. God bless, and may the good Lord continue to bless you. Thank you.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to the program. You heard just a few moments ago that awe-inspiring speech by Jim Kelly, who was a recipient of the Jimmy V Courage Award at the ESPYs on Wednesday night. I echoed it earlier in the program. I enjoyed many a memory. Had a fantastic time hanging out with James Kelly back in the day during those Buffalo Bill runs. God bless Jim Kelly and his family. Welcome back to the program, Sports Wrap with Dwayne Walker. And speaking of family, I have a very special announcement to make right quick before we get into this hour. July 19th is a very, 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 very special day to me. Why? Because my little sister, Alicia Lavon Walker, was born today. And she lives here in Atlanta, and I want to say happy birthday, sis. I love you dearly. Love you dearly. All right, so coming up this hour, we're going to talk about some stuff. You think that the Julio Jones situation has caused some controversy in the National Football League or here locally, the Atlanta Falcons? How about across the landscape of the National Basketball Association, where Kawhi Leonard gets traded to north of the border? The Toronto Raptors? Why? Doesn't make any sense. We'll try to make sense of it coming up in just a few moments. Plus, we get to the bottom half of the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about the Atlanta Falcons and the L.A. Rams. Now, people are picking the Rams to do big, big things this upcoming season. Now, are the L.A. Rams, are they the anti-Falcons? And then at 12:42, Gary Danielson, you know him, does a lot of SEC football, done a bunch of Georgia games. We'll hear what he has to say with SEC Media Days being here in the city of Atlanta. And hey, to close out the hour, everybody loves a parade, right? Nothing like throwing a parade when you have a when you win a major championship. And can't wait to share with you the major championship that was won on Wednesday night that is deserving of a huge parade. We're going to tell you about it at 12:57. All right, without any further ado, man, let's get right into this whole NBA thing, all right? I'll give you a couple of numbers if you want to sound off. 404-741-0929 is the number. All right, so here's just another riveting example of how DeMar DeRozan, who had been in Toronto for, man, I guess this would have been his 10th year coming in, at least 9 years, right? But he is part of a trade that will send him to San Antonio. And for basically, I mean, nothing at the end of the day. And you ask yourself, how does something like that happen in the National Basketball Association when a guy has basically given his all to Toronto, a place where DeRozan could have left a long time ago, right? He could have last year. He could have gotten out of Dodge and went to. He could have went to the Clippers, I think, or the Lakers, or he could have gone out west, and he decided to actually stay in Toronto, where he wanted to retire as a Toronto Raptor. And when you think about it, DeMar DeRozan, who, other than being an Atlanta Hawks killer, he's an all-NBA type cat, right? Averages 23 points a game. He's off the chain. He's a very good ball player. And it's just awfully disturbing when you see organizations do away with people, quality players who go on record now to say, hey, look, I want to stay here. I want to retire here. And I'm willing to even, like, you know, take less just to stay here because I love it here. Only to bring in Kawhi Leonard, who we all know is not going to stay in Toronto. He's only going to be there for a cup of coffee, right? Because he refused to play in San Antonio, and Coach Popovich and the Spurs decided to move on without him. And we know ultimately Kawhi Leonard wants to go to the Lakers, and that's going to be put off, I guess, a year or so it seems. So in the interim, I guess the Toronto Raptors decide they're going to be the talk of the town, the talk of the NBA world, because everybody and their mother knows that Kawhi Leonard does not want to play in Toronto, ultimately, right? And it's just a pit stop until he opts out next year and goes and signs a $190 million four-year deal with whoever he decides to sign with. And all indications are that that's going to be the Los Angeles Lakers. And the Lakers will just wait in the wings and, you know, see what happens. But in the interim, this whole thing about loyalty in sports, there is no loyalty in sports. Very rarely will you see where one player, and really a superstar player, even in today's sports, will stick with one team. There was a stat Patman Woo, the producer of the program, threw at me. He said of 20 NBA All-Stars from 2 years ago, from 2016, of 20 NBA All-Stars, guess how many of those All-Stars are still with their respective organizations? That's a Canadian term or a Canadian inflection. Organization. Four. All but four. Four have remained with their respective teams. 16 have been dealt or gotten out of Dodge, whatever you want to call it. So I ask you, even in Atlanta sports, Lord, are there any athletes here in the city of Atlanta that you feel as though an Atlanta franchise has been loyal to its player? All right? And I'm talking about from beginning to the end. Is there anybody that you can think of? I can think of somebody right off the top. I would say, for example, Wayne Chipper Jones. That would be one, right? Like he began and ended his career on a good note, right? It wasn't like any sour grapes when he went away. At least, not that I can recall. Other names that come to the fold, you think of Roddy White, right? But Roddy White kind of went out, if you ask me, with a little bit of controversy. Maybe a little personal and vendetta by Shanahan, maybe, in running him out of town, forcing him to retire, whatever you want to call it. But who else? Is there anybody here that you can think of who spent their entire career in Atlanta? You know what I'm saying? And was treated, where the organization was loyal. Can't say, like, Dominique Wilkins. Can't say him. Who is there? You know what? I guess would you count Thrashers? But you can't even count the Thrashers because I would say Ilya Kovalchuk, right? Was that his name? But you can't even say him, right? Or could you? Because the team bounced. The team wasn't loyal. They bounced from Atlanta. And by the way, I'm still butt sore about that. Do you miss the hockey team, Greg? Patman, who?
I do and I don't, because the Penguins had their greatest run in my lifetime after the team I worked for left town, so I had to be a Penguins fan again. So it's a weird thing. But the one I would throw out that I'd be very curious to see what your thoughts are is I think the team was extremely loyal to him, but he wasn't loyal to the team, and that would be one Michael Vick.
Ooh.
Would Vick have finished his entire career as a Falcon?
Ooh.
That's the question I would pose in the loyalty conversation.
Well, the Falcons, look, man, anytime you have an owner pushing some player in a wheelchair, an owner pushing a player in a wheelchair, that speaks volumes. And I said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, I'll say it today. Mike Vick never should have lied to that man when he asked him, Mike, do you have anything to do with the Dogs? He should have answered that man honestly. You know what I'm saying? Because you know he already knew the answer to it. Like, whenever you're asked a question by them corporate folk, like, you know what I'm saying, people like the owner, like, you know Arthur Blank knew the answer to the question he was asking before he asked it, right? Because he's got intel. He's got people that report to him. He's got people that let him know, hey, this is about to go down. Like, we getting ready to take down your star player. Like, for example, when they were closing in the doors on him, on Mike Vick, you don't think Arthur Blank, the team owner, was notified before it all went down? Yes, of course. Just out of due respect. Out of due respect. So he never should have lied, and that's what he did. But I'll tell you what, I think it's even bigger, though, however, of the Falcons to show that they could forgive. Not necessarily forget, but they could forgive. And I'm so happy that Arthur Blank and the Falcons organization have allowed Michael Vick to come back into the fold. I think that speaks volumes more than anything, because that's something that they did not have to do. Do you follow what I'm saying? And to Mike Vick's credit, man, what a turnaround. What a turnaround from doing his time, doing his community service, and coming back and really being a positive force on society today. He's a guy that he's a guy that, like it or not, ladies and gentlemen, a guy that can move the needle. Even today in retirement, he can move the needle. Mike Vick's the type of guy right now. The Falcons said, you know what? We're going to sign Michael Vick as a backup to Matt Ryan for this season. We're going to sign him to a 2-year deal. I promise you. Because, you know, typically the starting quarterback doesn't play during the preseason. If Mike Vick was the starter during the preseason, you know, as the backup, you don't think Mercedes-Benz wouldn't be sold out? Like, Patman, would Mercedes-Benz be sold out? Yeah, that's like a no-brainer. All right, we come back, man. More Falcon talk. We're going to talk about the LA Rams, going to work them into the story, too. Now the Rams, they're like the anti-Falcons. Less needing them boys, making moves. We'll talk next. You listen to Sports Rap with Dwayne Walker on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
We're giving away a quarter of $1 million.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to the program, everybody. My name is Dwayne Walker. Sports Rap with Dwayne Walker on the air. Greg Patman, ooh, a.k.a. Greg Patton, producing tonight's program. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about some Atlanta Falcons talk, and we'll kind of keep up with that conversation in case you're just joining the program. Jeff Schultz is reporting, Jeff Schultz of The Athletic is reporting that the Atlanta Falcons have chosen not to consider redoing Julio Jones's contract. So that puts things at a standstill. Should this actually be true? Will Julio Jones report to camp? Will he not report to camp? Well, it's going to make for some fascinating conversation over the course of the next couple of days and Speaking of Jeff Schultz, coming up a little bit later this hour, we're going to actually hear from the former AJC beat writer who is now with The Athletic, writing for them. All right, so the LA Rams, all right, formerly the St. Louis Rams. Now, it seems like the Falcons have had this longtime affinity for doing business with the Rams. Isn't it not? Isn't that where we got number 39, the running back? Oh, my goodness. But listen, one thing you have to say about the LA Rams, number one, they had a fantastic year last year. They were 11-5, and for the first time in, geez, almost at least a decade and a half, about 14 years, have they actually won an NFC West title. They won that, and they got paid big dividends from the quarterback production from Jared Goff. But how about the offseason moves that they've made? I mean, on paper, they were really, really aggressive with the trade moves they made, the acquisitions they made, yesterday on Wednesday, they signed an extension for Brandon Cooks, a 5-year, $80 million extension, which makes him amongst the top paid wide receivers in the National Football League. He's a free agent? Okay, got you. Also, they acquired the services of Ndamukong Suh. They added from the Chiefs the cornerback Marcus Peters, and they gave up very little to get him. Marcus Peters, folks, when it goes down, Marcus Peters is probably going to be like a Hall of Fame type cornerback. He's got the most INTs of any corner or any player in the league in the last 3 years since 2015. It goes on and on. They who else did they add? They added they also got Sam Shields.
You're just asking the question, how is it with free agency money they're making this happen?
Yeah, how are they making this money?
The question we're asking is, the Los Angeles Rams are doing it a completely different way than the Atlanta Falcons are doing it.
Completely different.
And they're in a different boat because they're in the division that is rebuilding.
Yeah.
I don't care what the 49ers, the Seahawks, Cardinals, they're in rebuild mode.
Yes.
This Rams team could win this division for the next 2 to 3 years, probably.
And they're young. I love it. I love how they're doing it. Sean McVay, I mean, is he not the youngest? Is he the youngest? He's got to be the youngest.
He's still the youngest.
Yeah, dude.
He's still the youngest by like 2 years.
Doing that, doing it with youth and innovation. You know what I'm saying? And keep in mind, they unloaded some players, too. Some players that, you know, I would have loved for the Falcons to have acquired. Sammy Watkins. Tavon, the receiver. Alec Ogletree.
Who's now with the Giants.
Yeah.
And will be a key piece on that defense.
How about this? And I talked to you about this before the program coming in today. I would have loved for the Falcons to have tried to somehow acquire the services of one Aaron Donald. Why do I want to say Luke Donald? Who the hell is Luke Donald? Oh, he's a golfer. Aaron Donald. That's his name, right? The defensive back, defensive lineman, Aaron Donald, right? Aaron Donald, because really a similar situation with Aaron Donald where he held out last year, right? Because the team really didn't want to pay him. But he's certainly worth the dough. He's one of the best defensive linemen in all of professional football. And this is just going to go more and more in line with my earlier sentiments about the state of sports in the National Football League and the NBA and Major League Baseball. I mean, however you want to ask Machado whether or not if sports is loyal. You know what I mean? It's like, it's wherever you go, man. It's all about business, and you're never, ever guaranteed, Jack. You're never, ever guaranteed a spot. You're never, ever guaranteed, oh, you're not going nowhere. You can't be traded. You can't be touched. That's malarkey, dude. You can be touched. You can be traded if the team feels it's something that they can benefit from. And just bringing it back to our Falcons, the Falcons have made some moves here during the, you know, during the offseason, and we get it. There's a certain time period, certain time frame in which you want to capitalize on your youth and the movement as far as what the Falcons are doing. And what's transpiring on the defensive side of the football is absolutely remarkable. Like, I'm into it. I love it. I love the passion that the young guys, guys who are up for contracts coming up, Grady Jarrett, Ricardo Allen, our leader Deion Jones, and that force back there in Keanu Neal. These are Dan Quinn's guys, and he wants to make sure these guys are taken care of, right?
But I think the question is which is more attractive to the fan base? I think that's the question that you're getting toward is what the Rams are doing, that is what you would do in Los Angeles. But we've seen this in Atlanta where there's this mentality of, well, we take care of our own.
Right.
We only want to focus on our – and – I guess if you had the same kind of success on a continuous basis, you probably would get the pass. But because it's very up and down how these teams have seemed to have gone through the motions.
Well, not only that. Hey, listen, Pat, man, not only that. When you look at the state of sports today, like, since when has losing become a strategy? You know what I'm saying? Like where you lose to win, like where you tank to rebuild, like you know what I'm saying? I don't understand this mentality. I don't understand this mentality.
I agree, and I would say the other part would be never before do people who, when they get mad, that you have a Kevin Durant type situation where we're going to make the decision ourselves of where to go, and we're going to determine where we go. That comes back to that loyalty conversation you had last hour. Why are you getting mad about players deciding of where they're going to call their shot and go if you see that all of the organizations are just paying lip service to the player
right.
as an employee?
Right. So that's why you can't blame the player for doing what he has to do to get whatever it is he's trying to get, whether it be a new contract, whether it be championship ring chasing. I mean, every guy's situation is going to be different. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, it's 12:30, half past the hour of midnight on the flagship station of our Atlanta Falcons, Atlanta Hawks, Atlanta United. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm going to ask you to hang in there, man, because coming up, we're going to be speaking with Jeff Schultz, who writes for The Athletic. He was on our radio on yesterday, and he has come in with a story concerning Julio Jones. He's reporting that the Atlanta Falcons do not plan on redoing his contract, right? And obviously that's going to make a splash. It's going to make a splash on the national airwaves. I can't wait to wake up this morning and find out what the reaction is going to be. But please believe it. There's going to be one. 404-741-0929. Let's take a phone call right now. Let's go out to this is the place where my where my best friend lives, Carrie. But this is Preston. Preston, how you doing, man?
What's going on, Dwayne?
What you know about Franklin, Tennessee, man? That's where my best friend lives.
I played a little golf down there, you know, a little bit.
Okay, that's what's up. Hermitage?
Yeah. Yeah, I played in Hermitage.
Okay.
I played, definitely Gaylord, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, but, that's what's up.
Yeah, definitely try the Seahawks built their roster versus the way that that these Rams are building it. And my take on it is this is unsustainable. You got a lot of guys that have to get paid. And ultimately, the way you win in the National Football League is through the draft. And you have to have control over these guys and be able to slate your roster when it comes to paying these guys appropriately. It's unsustainable. You got Marcus Peters that's due up for a contract soon. You still have Jared Goff, Todd Gurley. They still haven't signed my man, the defensive tackle, Aaron Donald.
Right.
They just gave Brandon Cooks this deal. But Aaron Donald is holding out, and he wants to get paid.
And he deserves the money.
Right. And they're gonna have to give him a $100 million deal. So I don't know where all this money is coming from. This is not like the NBA where you can go into the luxury tax and all that kind of stuff. They have a 2, maybe a 3-year window, and they have to win the championship, or, you know, that it's all going to blow up in their face. So I'd much rather my team to go through the draft, get a couple free agents here and there to fill a couple slots, than to sit here and load up on all this talent where you cannot sign all these guys.
So who's wait? So at the end of the day, who do you think is doing it the better way, the Falcons or the Rams?
When it comes to shock value and all that kind of stuff, I mean, you got to give it to the Rams in that sense. But when it comes to sustainability in the NFL, you have to draft. You have to be able to build your team that way. No team in NFL history has been able to do what the Rams are attempting to do. Remember, the Redskins tried to do this in the late 90s, early 2000s by bringing in Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders and all those guys.
And they also brought in Andre Reed, too, at the latter stages of his career, his Hall of Fame career.
Right. And granted, you know, these guys are a lot younger than that what they tried to assemble in Washington. But, I mean, ultimately, you have to have control over these guys. They have to be able to mesh and all that kind of stuff. It's not like the NBA where, you know, over an 82-game season, you know, guys can kind of gel together. You only got 16 games to get this right.
Yeah.
And ultimately, a lot of the times it takes, you know, teams like the Seahawks, where they drafted all those guys and they were able to mesh together and eventually evolve into what was known as the Legion of Boom.
All right, man. Hey, appreciate it, man. Preston, some very cool comments, man, coming out of Nashville, Tennessee. Do appreciate it. All right, we come back, man. Jeff Schultz, he's the cat that, I guess, breaking the story about Julio Jones and the Falcons reportedly not willing to renegotiate his contract before the 2018 season. But Jeff Schultz was on our air a couple, yesterday? And we'll have that radio replay next. You're listening to Sports Wrap with Dwayne Walker on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
You'll watch him with our silky smooth sounds of Brad Nestler,
Brad,
the best, arguably the best college commentator in the world, the guy that could basically tell you what's going to happen every play if he wanted to. Gary Danielson joins us from the SEC on CBS. How you doing, Gary?
Good, Mike. How you doing? It's I'll tell you, I like my time off, but this you know, I'm kind of a hermit in the off season, but now my kind of like alter ego comes out. People want to know what I think all the time. I go, you know, in the off season, I go, honey, don't you care what I think? She's not really. But around here, everybody cares, and then they get upset afterwards, you know.
Gary, we talked to our guy Ness yesterday. Yeah. Nestler's a friend of the show, obviously lives here in Atlanta, and we're good friends with him. But we were talking to him about your ability to, as Mike said, assess plays. Take us behind the curtain. How much film do you watch leading into a week of a game with two opponents?
At least 2 games of each, you know, and then you have the background of being in the league. But you can't I don't think you can, but it's only my opinion. I don't think you can study your way into knowing
what's
going to happen.
Yeah,
and you have to have that basis of instinct. You know, I played, I called plays, I understand the game, I understand the strategy, I know what coaches are thinking and quarterbacks are thinking, and a lot of it just makes sense. You know, it's not that I know what they're going to do. It's almost like this is what I would do in this situation. So you just, like you know, like what a jump pass happens once every 5 years. But I called the jump pass because I knew they had it, and it felt like the, like if I had that play,
I'd use it.
This is where I'd use it, you know. So I go to, I grab him, and I like says, listen, I know I've seen Kerryon throw. He can flip the ball.
Right.
If I'm calling, ever going to call the jump pass, and then it happens, you know. So it's not that you know it. It's just that you can feel it coming.
Right. Gary Danielson, you recognize the voice, guys, from the SEC on CBS with us here live at SEC Media Days. So we were just talking as you were getting your headphones on about Alabama's situation with Tagovailoa and Hurts.
Yeah.
We've got an interesting situation because Fields is you know, the best thing since sliced bread. Fromm did the job.
Sure.
As a quarterback, though, how does it work? Is it about a rhythm? Is it about the coach trying to find the way to get these guys the touches? How does that work out?
Well,
without screwing the pooch,
I don't know if it's explainable. Quarterback's a little bit different than any other position in all of sports. You're asked to conduct and play at the same time. And I had a really great player when I was first starting to play. In actually, it was in the World Football League talked to me. I used to pick his brain because George Sauer Jr. was the guy. He played with Namath for the Jets, and he was on my first team. And he just took me under his wing, and he said, "You're going to be good. You got something." And I go, "Well, what do I got?" You know. And he says, "You have what's kind of unteachable." He says, "Quarterback's hard." And he says, "What Joe has and what Joe had instinctively, and you got to be able to develop is a quarterback has to be able to handle being the guy, the guy that gets all the credit, the guy that gets all the blame, the guy that gets all the interviews, the guy that gets the girls, the guy that everything about the quarterback position is the." Okay, and some guys can't handle that spotlight; they don't like it. I'll give you a perfect example: great Greg. Player, hardest worker I ever saw. Joey Harrington went to the Detroit Lions out of Oregon. Just wasn't comfortable being the guy. And I went, I says, "Well, what else?" And he says, "You also have to be a guy."
Right. In that locker room.
You have to be able to blend and understand what, you know, the trainer's going through and your offensive linemen are going through and have sympathy for the DB that got beat on a play or that the receivers are out there frustrated because they can't get the football and have a picnic, invite the guys over. And if you can't be a guy, you can never be the guy. It's a little bit broadcasting too, by the way, you know, with my job. It's really high profile. I like it that way. But if you can't handle being the voice of the SEC and taking all the stuff that comes with it.
You hate us, Gary.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, then you can't be the guy because this is a great job. But this fan base demands perfection, even though it's not possible from their quarterbacks, their recruiting, from their head coach, from their play caller, from their alumni association, their facilities. And their announcing team, they demand perfection. Even though it can't be possible to do, that's what they demand.
Right.
That's the fun of the job, though.
Gary Danielson joining us. And Gary, you're right. Being in locker rooms. Being a guy.
Yeah, it's important, isn't it?
Because you don't ever want to feel like the quarterback's better than
you. That's right.
And if you feel like that, there's a disconnect in the locker room where everybody's like, "I don't like that guy."
Well, you know, Carl, it was even a little bit more tough for me. I was a free agent quarterback for the Lions. Everybody, it's a funny line I've used it before. Everybody talks about the toughest thing to do in sports is hit a baseball, right? Well, I go, you know what's tougher? Being a free agent starting quarterback year in and year out on a losing team and keep your job.
Right.
Because that's the guy they, you know, everybody's going like, hey, we got everything except a quarterback, you know?
Right.
But I turned it into my favor. And this is what I think. You got to be how you got to manage the position. Before the game and all week, I'd be going, "Get it going, guys, because they got Fouts and we don't, and you better play your asses off. Because we ain't getting Fouts this week. And no Marino. They ain't trading me for Marino, so we got what we got, you know."
That's I might not great. Be able to get 5 touchdowns.
Right.
Gary Daniels and guys.
Everybody would laugh, and then I'd say, "Hey, I'm the most valuable guy here because every time we lose, it's my fault. You guys know you love it,
love
right?
It. I love yeah, it. Gary can sling it, man. He can spin it, as they say, in college and the NFL. Now, of course, with our buddy, his teammate, Brad Nessler. He's with us here live at SEC Media Days. We know that Saban is not everything you see behind that podium when you and Brad get a chance to see him. Other coaches, Ed Ogeron, Kirby, most of these guys all the same? They try to lock it in or they let you behind the curtain with what's going on?
Not very often. They don't. They give you what they want to give you. You have to try to read between the lines. You know, they are totally playing poker with you. They're feeding you information they want out over the air. Sometimes they'll tell you stuff off the record. I mean, Mark Richt was a big off-the-record guy, and I would just say, "Mark, I'm not that smart. I can't remember what's off the record and on the record. You know, just tell me what you want to tell me or don't tell me, you know." But they're a lot similar. The success of a coach has a lot on how they handle the dynamics of our interviews.
Right.
There's a few coaches that cannot stand me. I can tell when I walk right into the room. There's a few coaches that feel comfortable with me because of my expertise and how long I've been doing it. Most of them are in the middle because I don't do them all the time. But they all, I think, respect that I do my homework. I show up for practice. I talk about X's and O's. I don't go talk about their jobs. You know, and I stick to what I believe I know. And if I vary from there, but, you know, they know I'm influential, and fans either take what I say and listen, or they argue with it, or it's a talking point. So they're always trying to play me, and I have to do my job. I represent the fans in CBS. I don't represent Nick Saban or Kirby Smart or Gus Malzahn. And, you know, I've had some tense situations, but I always tell them, you know, I mean, I'm doing the job the best I can. What am I doing wrong? There's a few times they're right and a few times I'm right.
Yeah. Yeah. You just never been the, get out of my face, Gus.
No, I don't do that. Okay. I respect them. I respect their, how hard their job is.
No, Nestler's the third man in the ring. He just steps in.
Gary Danielson joining us here on Dukes and Bell, guys. The hires in the SEC West.
Uh-huh.
Which one made you go, okay?
There's no doubt Jimbo.
Okay. Right?
Yeah, because it's a sleeping giant, and Texas A&M has gotten soft. It was embarrassing the way they were playing football. I mean, I love Kevin Sumlin. He's a Purdue guy. He played linebacker. But that trick him, finesse him, throw back shoulder fades, find a RPO that works is never going to work in this league. You're too soft on defense. They didn't tackle anybody. It was Texas A&M. I'm watching Texas A&M football play like that. It was –
It's why they didn't beat anybody in November.
Totally.
In November. They struggled.
Soft. They were soft. 5-0. They were soft. Yeah. They really were. So was Tennessee, to be honest.
Right.
Okay? And I thought Kevin knew it, but he built his reputation and he got his job with his hurry-up, no-huddle. But, you know, that's a nice technique. It's not a program. I'm just telling you, it's not a program.
So Gary, let me ask you this. As you talk about that, what's the difference in a guy like Dan Mullen going to Florida? Now, I know Mullen's proven himself in this league, but he's also a guy that's been, you know, he's a great play caller, right?
Well, he is with Tebow and Percy Harvin and all those guys, but he needs to get that type of talent around him again. There's not as much pressure coaching at Mississippi State and South Carolina as there is at Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. I mean, it's just not. You win your eight games, you get a raise. You know,
it's true.
So I'll tell you,
Gary Danielson, keep it real.
Right? One coach, I'm not going to say who it is. When we were talking, they were interviewing him, and somebody said something about CBS, and he goes, I'd like to play, but I'd like to play these guys at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I go, Coach, they ain't paying you $5 million to play at 11 o'clock in the morning. They're paying you to $5 million to play at 3:30 or 8 o'clock at night. I'm telling you that right now. You know, so, and it bristles them, but it's the damn truth. You know.
Oh man, Gary Danielson is with us here, guys. SEC on CBS. He and Brad, you're getting a chance to win $1,000 with our national sounding bonus contest coming up in just a bit.
But there are two. I mean, the two storylines for Georgia and Alabama are fascinating this year, though, aren't they? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's back as far as, you know, Florida and Alabama, and then a little bit LSU and Alabama when they were elite. You know, when you were watching the LSU-Alabama and you knew over the next 3 years they probably would have 60 guys going to the NFL.
Right.
Or you had Florida and Alabama and that one game Florida played Oklahoma and you're looking on the field and go, man, out of the 22 starters, 20 of them are going to play in the NFL someday, you know, between freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. So, I think when you now look at Georgia and Alabama, the talent they're acquiring, and, you know, Kirby's move in recruiting has forced Nick's hand. He rebuilt the staff. He went young again. He went out and got the hot shots, and he goes, you know, I'm going to go hit the trail. And Kirby, you know, game on, you know.
I'm with Dwayne Walker. Greg Patton is producing tonight's program, a.k.a. Greg Patman, who? Hey, Greg, I have a question for you. What do you do when you win the world championship at the NBA Summer Basketball League? What do you do?
Well, you have a parade because obviously this is the goal, is to win a Summer League championship.
I'm going to let you handle this one, man. All right,
so the Portland Trail Blazers ended up winning the Summer League, okay?
Lakers.
Yes, yeah. Over the Lakers, of course.
Repeat of last year's Summer League championship, by the way.
Well, then it's a dynasty. I mean, now the conversation can go, why is this not equating to actual NBA success? But what I appreciate is the fan base went all in on this.
All in.
They have a parade. It's a gathering. It's not a parade downtown or anything ridiculous. They've printed T-shirts. that celebrate back-to-back Summer League championships. They are selling them online.
No way.
I am so impressed that they're committing. So,
and they're getting sales?
People are going to buy them, obviously. I mean, why? If you were a Portland Trail Blazer fan right now,
no,
and you looked at this team and you said, when are we going to win anything in the West in the next decade? You'd probably buy a few of those shirts. But
a
the
Summer
but
League
I love the capitalism of it. I love that somebody is taking it to this level. So my next question is, are we going to apply this to other sports? Are we going to have the 4-0 championship rings for the preseason teams?
Wow.
Are we going to take it to where you look at the NHL Summer League, I mean, right around August, where they have the tournaments? Are you going to actually celebrate that? This is the equivalent of travel teams.
No, you don't. It's like everybody gets a trophy. Everybody wins. You just win. I mean, whatever you win, we're going to celebrate it, give a big trophy, and we're going to have a parade. We're going to close down schools. We're going to not go to work. We're going to celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. Everybody wins.
What about spring practice games, like spring football now? Are we actually going to hand out T-shirts that red beat black or something ridiculous like that?
It's how it is today, man. We might be celebrating. I know some people want to celebrate. Who the next quarterback is going to be for the Georgia Bulldogs? Is Jake Fromm going to hold his position? That's the big topic of conversation.